Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is brought to you by the Era Media Group, publishers of ShowSite Magazine. Together, we are strong supporters of the American Kennel Club and the preservation of our purebred dogs. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I am joined today by an author by the name of Mark Winnick, who's written a very, very interesting book. It's called The Dog Healers, and Mark's going to talk to us today about how he came about writing this novel. So, welcome, Mark. I look forward to hearing your story.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to hear your voice and to be interviewed by somebody that's just a wonderful interviewer from what I've listened to briefly about the folks you've interviewed. So, thank you, and I really appreciate this interview. So,
yeah, it'll be fun. So we talk about the 411. Give us your 411, Mark. A little bit of background, how you got started as an author. You have dogs of your own, so tell us a little bit about that.
So I've had dogs throughout my life. I was fortunate enough to be introduced to the canine world through my father and my family, and I've always had dogs in my life. I can't even count how many, you know. My father used to bring home stray dogs or purebred dogs. I could even remember a time in New Hampshire when he saw some Springer Spaniels walking on the roof of one of the homes in the woods of New Hampshire. I think it was Laconia. And we pulled over and we ended up taking home a pup. And he loved Siberian Huskies and also St. Bernards. Throughout my childhood and even adult life, I've had so many different types of dogs. As far as my background as an author, this is my first novel. What I can say is maybe writing's in my family blood because I have a brother that has 3 bestsellers, a sister-in-law that also has 4 bestsellers, and also extended family like cousins or aunts or uncles that have also been authors. So it's something that actually I could say I've really loved writing this story. Passionate about the message in the story, and once I started, I couldn't stop. So.
Well, that's my understanding of authorship is, you know, you have a story to tell, so you tell it. So what prompted you to write The Dog Healers?
So that's a great question. I mean, I think, as I said before, I've had dogs throughout my life, and there's something about the bonds between whether it be me or I'd say there's 90 million dogs in the United States alone, there's something about the bond that people share with dogs that is very special. But what really captivated me, my wife's family are all from Buenos Aires, Argentina. And we go there every year for maybe a couple of weeks, thank goodness, because it's always great to get away. Buenos Aires and the country of Argentina is really such a wonderful place, and I was really captivated by all the dog walkers there. It's actually a profession. There's so many dog walkers. I'd say hundreds of them every morning hit the different neighborhoods and pick up dogs all throughout the city of Buenos Aires, and they're really a very dog-loving society. But what really struck me is they walk anywhere from 5 to 20 dogs at one time, and it's just an amazing sight, especially if you're a dog lover. And I think it's very unique. You might see this in a couple of parts of the United States, like major cities where they'll walk so many dogs at one time, like New York City or perhaps L.A. I haven't been all over the country in the past 5-10 years, but I mean, some of the cities that I have visited, you'll see something similar, but it's really something special about Buenos Aires. They're well-educated and warm people, and a lot of them don't speak English because it's so far away from the United States. So while I was there, I happened to talk with the different dog walkers and get a sense of them, and I noticed that the dog walkers would actually massage their dogs, and I said, well, this is interesting and fascinating because it's something also very unique and you don't see. And I started to inquire with different dog walkers, and nobody really spoke English. So I found a very nice female dog walker, and she said, oh, you should really go to a park which is equivalent to Central Park in New York, and you have to meet with this gentleman whose name is Carlos, and he is also known as the dog healer. So I was fascinated by, what does that mean? He's the dog healer.
Right.
Yeah, so I thought it was super interesting. And unfortunately, I couldn't have a conversation with her at the time. So the next morning, I sought him out. She gave me an idea of where he typically goes, because they all go to their own turf in their own park on a daily basis. I sought him out, and I actually met him. I saw this really great-looking guy. I mean, 23 years old, just handsome as can be. And he was almost like in a trance, just hovered over a beautiful golden retriever. And he was massaging him. And just to see the two of them together, it was almost tranquility for both of them. So after he finished massaging the dog, he must have had about 20 dogs with him, all staked out about 5 meters apart. I approached him, and it all started there.
Wow.
I just ended up spending, I would say, 2.5 days walking through different neighborhoods, picking up and dropping off dogs, and going to the park with him, and really got to know him and his philosophies about what it means to be a dog healer. But really, in his philosophy, what it meant to be is the dogs actually heal humans in so many ways. So it touched me. And just after spending time with him, I said, you know what? I'm going to start writing the story.
Yeah. So the story, The Dog Healers, the novel, is about Carlos. And how much of this is basically a true story, his reminiscing to you?
Well, that's a good question, because part of this story is based on nonfiction, and a good part is based on fiction. How much of it? I would say the part about the dog healing and the massage and his vision in life and the love of his life, who's Isabella in the story, a good part of that is true. And then I said, well, I really want to make this more engaging, and I want it to be more of a novel-like story. So that's how it came into being. So
absolutely. So fiction based on bones of nonfiction, I guess.
Right. Well, I think every writer that does write fiction or writes novels,
mm-hmm.
they'll tell you that the most successful writers write about what they know. And since dogs have been such a big part of my life and my family's life, it just came very natural for me. And I consider myself more of a storyteller than a writer. So that actually helped immensely with me creating some incredible scenes and characters and tension and humor throughout the story. So
absolutely. Beautifully
yeah.
done. So the story really focuses on that human-animal bond that we were talking about earlier. And that is enhanced by this Tibetan massage practice that you talk about. And I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to not even try.
So, Kumnai.
Kumnai. Okay. Kumnai. I assume, but okay. So when I did my research, I saw reference to this as regards a particular type of yoga and even human massage. So is this taking that basic concept and applying it to animals, or how does that work?
Exactly. I mean, really, you apply the same principles as human massaging another person, mm-hmm. and touch is so incredibly important for people. I've also probably had hundreds of massages myself. over the years, I've had massages all over the world. But really what it's about is applying the same techniques of massaging a dog or an animal, or even within the story, the same technique was applied with racehorses,
right,
by
racehorse.
Isabella. And really what it does is it creates an even stronger bond than we already have with dogs. I can honestly tell you that many people that have read the book and contacted me said, you know, I never even thought about this, and I do it with my dog on a daily basis now, and how relaxing it is for both of us. It calms not only the human, but also the dog, and it's just something really special.
Absolutely. And I think of it because many of our listeners are people who show dogs or participate in performance events with their dogs. And a lot of us use, probably not this exact concept, but the idea of you can feel the dog and you stretch the dog and you do these sorts of things that are part of the bonding process. And I never really thought of it that way.
You know, and I think some people just do it. It's second nature to them. It's actually healing to both the animal and the human when this technique is used. That's why I say it's something really
right.
special. It's great for our health. Really great for our health. It's great for energy flow and releases tension or tightness in the body. It's good for circulation and muscles. And there's just something really wonderful about touch. And it's also, I think, somewhat meditative. And this was actually used for, I don't know, 1,000 years by the Tibetan monks. So this was something that they treasured. They treasured their dogs. And I know in the book, you're probably going to get to the next question about the chow stiffs.
Yes. So that was fascinating to me. You know, we have in the American Kennel Club, in the dog show world, we have Tibetan mastiffs. So in the book,
right.
you talk about chow stiffs. And I'm, okay, so is this what that is? Or where did that come from? I love that.
Well, I actually made up the word chow stiff. In actuality, these two dogs were crossbred by the Tibetan monks probably 1,000 years ago, and they were used to guard the temple, but it was a cross between a chow chow, which is a wonderful animal. I've had one, was just an amazing dog. Some people say, oh, they fear dogs, and I just had the most incredibly mellow chow imaginable that lived to 18 years old, which is a long time for a chow, because usually their lifespan is at about 12 years. And also Tibetan Mastiff. So the two dogs were crossbred and primarily used to guard the temple grounds and the temple monks. And they were also used for other services by the monks as work dogs also. So I just love the name Chow Stiff. So, you know, we have all these designer dog names, and really, I guess the Tibetan monks perhaps didn't call them Chow Stiffs, or maybe they did. I don't know. But I thought it was a cool name. So my wife and I, we have two wonderful dogs. We have a Wheaton Terrier, which is just really an amazing animal. And we also have a, I guess it's known as a Woodle. So it's a cross between a Wheaton and a standard poodle, and she is just an amazing dog, and the two of them are so different.
Right. The other purebred dog reference in the book that I thought was really fascinating, I read with a lot of interest, you having been in Buenos Aires, and I assume that was where you encountered the Dogo and Argentino, and that is a very, very interesting breed that's coming into American Kennel Club recognition.
So about the Dogo Argentino, I think it's great that they're going to be recognized by the AKC. And in Argentina, it was primarily used as a big game hunter. They also have been trained for search and rescue, police assistance, service dogs, guides for the blind. They've also been involved in competitive obedience and also military work. So average male is about 95 pounds.
Yeah,
it's short. They're typically all white, and they're just very strong dogs. And they kind of have evolved into just guard dogs. Actually, in Buenos Aires, there's certain grounds that have to be well guarded, whether it be for military or police use, but also for wealthy grounds there that have to be guarded, and they're used in that capacity there. And a lot of people fear these dogs in Argentina because they are used as guard dogs. But a lot of their aggressive traits, I believe, have been bred out. And just like any other dog, if you socialize it properly and you show it a lot of love, it'll give the same loyalty and love back to you and can make a wonderful companion.
Right. Like they talk about in this country, any of the bully breeds, you know, it's not about the dog, it's about the people. So.
Exactly. You know, that's so true. So true.
Absolutely.
Really.
So the story is so impactful and so powerful, talking about the human-animal bond and the ability basically to heal people. You talk about the little boy that has cancer, and what would you hope to have as an impact on society in general as people come to understand the power that that has?
That's a great question, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the Dog Healers Project and my vision.
Yeah.
Really, to me, is so important within the story, even though it is a novel, is the message of how important dogs are in our lives, and in so many aspects, they heal the human spirit and the human soul with a wide range of uses that range from companionship for kids that actually come from broken homes. They're just amazingly loyal and comforting for kids, and I think they play a very special role. Coming from Oregon, I'll give you an idea. In the midst of working on a documentary called The Dog Healers, and it's really about how dogs are used in so many different aspects of therapy and service in our lives. And I know you've got some really just wonderful organizations. I don't know why in Oregon in particular, but a great woman that I interviewed, she received a dog from Dogs for the Deaf. And she has a hearing impairment. And I mean, just to hear her story when I interviewed her, she was just nervous. She wasn't treated the same as other people, and she was afraid to do things in her life. She had no independence. And the moment she received her service dog from Dogs for the Deaf, it just changed her life dramatically and opened up a whole world that was never open to her before. So I just thought that was amazing. You also have like another great nonprofit called Pet Partners, which is also located in Oregon. And actually, I think always in the back of my mind, I've known about this organization. I've taken one of my prior dogs through Pet Partners volunteer programs. And I should say Pet Partners is probably the most incredible organization that certifies humans and dogs to provide therapy and service in so many different environments that I think we have to cherish, because it's just so vitally important for probably millions of people that need this type of joy comes into your life when a therapy dog that was certified by and its owner, but it's really all about the dog, comes into a hospital setting, and a kid that may have cancer, and this dog like comes over and just provides a moment of joy and relaxation. All of a sudden, they forget about all their troubles. To me, that's just really special, and this is really my vision now, is really what I'm working on, is that the Dog Healers Project, it's going to be a documentary series about how service and therapy dogs help people in so many different aspects of life, especially when they need it most during difficult times in their lives. Or it could just be for maintenance on a daily basis, and especially within a military setting. So mm-hmm. You have so many soldiers that come back PTSD, and it's amazing what a dog will do to help comfort the life of a military person that comes back from, you know, it's unimaginable what they may have gone through in certain parts of the world. And when they bond with that dog and the dog bonds with that soldier, it's something very powerful in my opinion.
It is. It is indeed. Well, thank you, Mark. We will make sure that we have links to all of this information so people can track down the book and read the story and check out the Dog Healers Project. And I really appreciate your time and your passion.
Yeah, I'm so glad we had this conversation. It's really been a pleasure. What can I tell you?
Very good.
Yeah. I'm so glad you have this passion and you also do something with this passion, you know, because I think it's all for the good.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Okay, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Allison is going to talk to us today about keeping your dog in shape in the off season. So welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are things in California today?
Well, early.
Early, I see. So I want to talk a little bit about what we do in the downtime when our dog isn't going to a dog show every weekend, etc. And I find that a lot of new people and some more experienced people, they make the mistake of just keep on training their dog. And training your dog is great, but when you overtrain your show dog, it just becomes, you either A, teach them a bad habit. So if you're training them to do something that they already know how to do, they're going to pick up a bad habit and basically unlearn that. The other thing that we end up doing is we end up just making them bored of the whole process. So I will say that I probably spend more time with my dogs in the off season, even though I spend, it seems, 25 hours a day with them during the on season. But I just do other things with them. So for instance, if they have house time or kennel time, I'll just let them loose and I'll just have like half of their breakfast in my pocket. And I'll just feed them tidbits so that they're always like trying to find me and look for me. And yeah, like once in a while I might say stand or watch me or just something. But most of the time, it's just like getting them to connect with me on every level. I do keep up their treadmill or free running as much as weather allows. Like where I live, weather is a factor as to how often that can happen. But I do keep up with treadmill, free runs, road work, whatever I can. And I do make sure that every other week they get, you know, at least partially show trimmed so that when the big dog show does happen, my dog doesn't have, you know, 6 weeks worth of growth on it.
Right.
So my biggest tip is during the off season is just to remember what our goal is, that we are going to show this dog again in 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 7 weeks, and just take steps to go towards that goal. But make all the interactions with your dog fun. If your dog has a problem, if your dog is a sidewinder or somebody that doesn't always bait, don't work necessarily on fixing those things, but work on distraction so that they can figure out how to just be your friend and really pay attention to you. And sometimes a lot of it just, it works the kinks out, it works the stress of everyday training out of them. And they come back to the show season just renewed, just like we do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you make a really great point. We have to make this fun for the dogs too, right? Like we have to give them that break and let them be dogs. And I think that that's really valuable information.
Right. Like my dogs spend a lot of time together and a lot of time just running around, pulling shampoo bottles out from underneath the bathtub and just basically creating chaos. But I think it is really great. And actually, you're right. Very, very important for them mentally to do that.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you very much, Allison. Listeners, don't forget Pure Dog Talk 25. When you check out from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy online courses, that will save you 25% on your purchase price. And I would say well worth at least a couple cups of coffee. Thanks very much, Allison.
Thank you, Laura.
All right. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk, brought to you by the Aramedia Group, publisher of Showsite Magazine, your home for purebred dogs.